There, as I said, have really been transformational changes in the organization and character and structure and environment of the workplace. And we need a board that can address those, that can adapt the board, the NLRA, make it relevant and have it meet those changes and those challenges and not shrink away from that and become irrelevant to the workplace.
This is Lawyer to Lawyer, the award-winning legal podcast with J. Craig Williams and Robert Ambrogi. West Coast meets East Coast, and yes, they are attorneys, bringing you the latest legal news and observations every week with the leading experts in the legal profession. Produced right here on the Legal Talk Network.
Welcome to Lawyer on the Legal Talk Network. We're glad you could listen today. This is Bob Ambrogi. I come to you from just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. My co-host, J. Craig Williams, is off this week. I, of course, write a blog called Law Sites and also the Media Law blog. And Craig's a blogger at mayitpleasethecourt.com. And before we get started, I'd like to just thank our sponsors for this week's program, SunTrust, which offers private wealth management solutions for attorneys and law firms at suntrust.com/law. And Clio, the web-based practice management program, which is available at goclio.com. Well, starting this week for the first time in more than 2 years, the National Labor Relations Board has a quorum, but not everyone in the labor management field is necessarily greeting that as good news. While Congress was away on Easter break, President Obama exercised his presidential powers to make recess appointments of two union side attorneys, Craig Becker and Mark Pierce, to fill two of the three vacant seats on the board. He didn't take any action with respect to a Republican candidate that's also been pending. Those two new board members join the board's Democratic chairwoman, Wilma Liebman, and the one Republican member on the board, Peter Schomburg. Schomburg's term expires in August. Business groups had strongly opposed the appointment of Becker in particular, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has now warned its members with these appointments to watch for radical changes in U.S. labor policy. Labor groups, meanwhile, have hailed the appointments. Adding to perhaps all the drama surrounding these appointments is the fact that much of what the NLRB, at least what the board has done over the last couple of years, is up in question. The Supreme Court heard arguments last month on whether the two-member board was appropriately deciding cases and taking actions as such, and a decision should be forthcoming in that at some point. So to talk about all of this turmoil, if you will, at the National Labor Relations Board, we have two guests joining us today. First of all is a returning guest to this program, Nancy Schiffer. Nancy is Associate General Counsel with the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations, the AFL-CIO. Her work focuses on worker organizing and member mobilization, state and local legislation in support of workers' rights, and NLRA jurisprudence and procedure. Nancy Schiffer is a frequent speaker on labor law issues and has testified as a labor law expert before congressional committees and subcommittees. Welcome to Lawyer, Nancy.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And next to join us is Attorney Charles Cohen, Senior Counsel at Morgan, Lewis & Bockius Labor and Employment Practice, based in Washington, D.C. Charles Cohen goes by the name nickname Chuck. Chuck's practice focuses on representing senior management in complex labor and employment law matters in the private sector. From 1994 to 1996, he served as a member of the NLRB himself. And prior to that presidential appointment, he held executive and staff labor law positions with the NLRB, as well as in private practice. He is also head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce NLRB Subcommittee, welcome to Lawyer, Chuck Cohen.
Thank you very much, Bob. Glad to be here.
Let's start with perhaps the most recent news, the appointments of attorneys Becker and Pierce. Both are union side attorneys. Mr. Becker has worked at the NLRB, has been in academics. Mr. Pierce has practiced with firms, I think most recently in Buffalo. What do you make of Nancy? Let's start with you. What do you see these appointments as representing? What do they mean to the AFL-CIO?
Well, I think what they mean to everyone is that we now have a board with four members. The Supreme Court, as you mentioned, recently heard argument on whether the board can proceed and issue decisions with only two members, which is what they've had for the last 27 months. And so it was extremely important that the president be able to make these recess appointments and put two more members on the NLRB. These individuals have been nominated last summer. And as reflective, I mean, this is reflective of the politicization of the Senate, that it's been a torturous process to try to get them through the system. And so in order to make sure we had a functioning, a fully functioning board, the president made these recess appointments.
And Chuck Cohen, what's your position on this? Why has the Chamber of Commerce in particular been so concerned about these appointments?
Thank you, Bob. Let me start by saying that, as we know, the NLRB is supposed to be composed of five members, and it's structured in such a way so as that there will be one vacancy each year. And in theory, there would be a separate individual nominated and then confirmed each year. And by unbroken tradition, the party that occupies the White House has three of the appointments to the board as they open, and the opposition party has two. As you noted in the beginning, we're down to two members and have been for over a 2 year period of time. It is unfortunate, and it's probably reflective of our society, that we've gotten to a point where confirmation of board members is a difficult matter. So again, there should be five members of the board. Even with these two recess appointees, there will only be four. So President Obama chose to make recess appointees of both Craig Becker and Mark Pierce. But there, of course, was rather widespread concern in the management community about largely academic writings that Mr. Becker had published during his long tenure in academia. And, of course, his background was that he was representing both the AFL-CIO and the SEIU, two very dramatic organizations. So the fact that there are recess appointments that have been made is not particularly earth-shattering from my perspective. But we would have to close our eyes to the fact that there was substantial opposition to Mr. Becker. He could not get through the Senate, but the president nonetheless chose to recess appoint him, as was his prerogative. And of course, in so doing, the president chose to recess only to Democratic appointees and leave that remaining seat vacant. So it's a bold move, and it's one that, has a good deal of the business community concerned, at least.
Well, remind our listeners why it was that the chamber and others in the business sector opposed the nomination of Mr. Becker in particular.
Let me basically start with something that occurred near the end of the process, and that is there was a Senate hearing that Mr. Becker attended and testified at. And at that hearing, he explained that he had had a good deal of academic writings, and I think he would have been the first to concede, if he didn't at the hearing, that positions that he was espousing in those writings were ones that, for example, would take the employer out of the union recognition process and the NLRB processes. and largely the campaign processes as well. Those positions were quite a strong departure from the norm, both the law as it is administered now and how organizing campaigns occur. But Mr. Becker, in that hearing, solemnly said to the Senate that those were just the writings of an academic whose responsibility, he said it was, to test legal propositions, and that if and when he were confirmed to the board, or presumably serving on the board in this recess capacity, I don't think there's any functional difference there, that that he took the obligation quite seriously to administer the law and not to make the law. That's what we need to see, and that's what I believe would have the effect of dispelling the controversy over his appointment. Many, many cases at the NLRB are not particularly controversial cases. But there, and most of those, almost all of them, tend to be issued unanimously. But there are a number of cases which can be cutting edge, which when there's a Democratic majority, they would tend to go in one direction, creating new precedents or overruling old precedents, and with a Republican majority, the other way. And the question is really going to be, how will the law be administered? Will it be done in accordance with precedent? Or will this perhaps be a departure in an attempt to get through the NLRB what cannot be achieved through legislative change, which has been sought over the last several years by organized labor? So we have to see how that's going to play itself out.
If I could just add some facts that we've left out of this mix to paint this picture of this horrible person coming onto the board. Craig Becker is a graduate of Yale University, Yale Law School. He's taught at some of our nation's most prestigious law schools, Georgetown, University of Chicago, UCLA. I mean, he is a preeminent labor scholar, and his area has been NLRA. He is extremely qualified to be on the NLRB. The references to his academic writings have been taken are not what he said when you go back and actually look at what he wrote, but they became a surrogate for labor law reform, and he became a scapegoat of the Republican Party for this. But the facts are that Bush recessed 7 board members. His first appointments to the NLRB, Bush 2, when he became president, were recess appointments. 2 Republicans, made at a time when there were only 2 board members like now, and he did not appoint a Democrat at that time. He appointed just 2 Republicans. So what President Obama has done is not unprecedented. It's exactly what President Bush did before him. And one of President Bush's first appointments, this recess appointment he made, was a senior labor attorney right out of the Chamber of Commerce. So this is not exactly so the appointment of Craig Becker is an academic, a leading academic, a scholar, a labor law practitioner is not this unprecedented and bold move that's been painted.
Let me just clarify one thing, and I don't believe Nancy was implying that in any way. Nobody on this call is in any way implying that Craig Becker is somehow a horrible person or anything like that. I don't think that there's anything that's been said on the program that would lead anybody to believe that that was an implication here. Unquestionably, Mr. Becker is somebody who has devoted his professional career to traditional labor. At least as far as I'm concerned, there is absolutely nothing personal in anything that is the subject of this show.
Well, no, and Chuck, I heard you say that the record of what he does on the board will be the true test of what this appointment will mean. But hasn't it always been the case with the NLRB that policy does shift with the political tides and with the weight, the political weight of the board, whether it's primarily Democratic or primarily Republican. Why is there so much concern now that you know, either from the business community that the board will go off in a more a pro-union way, or by the union side that it hasn't been doing that in the recent past? Is there always some politicization in what the board does and the cases that it decides?
I think there has been politicization, absolutely. But let me turn to the time when I served on the board, which of course was in the Clinton administration. There was a desire to get the National Labor Relations Act opened up for so-called reform. It did not have the political winds behind it. Instead, there was a commission established called the Dunlop Commission. And there was an attempt through the NLRB to change many precedents in the law. We could argue about how successful those changes were and whether they radically changed the landscape or not, but there was a reversal of over 50 precedents during the Clinton board era. And similarly, in the Bush 2 era, there were reversals of precedent that went the other way. A fair amount of this is a reflection of the split in our society and that the political parties have. And of course, none of us are strangers to the fact that there has been a large attempt to enact the Employee Free Choice Act, commonly called the Card Check Bill, which would have dramatically changed the labor landscape. So that, as we know, is not advancing as we speak through Congress, and the question gets raised about what are the nature of the changes that are going to take place at the NLRB this time around. That's, of course, a fair question. And as I said earlier, and as you recognize, Bob, the truth in all this comes out in terms of what are the decisions and what's the administration of the act look like by the current board.
Well, the Bush administration, Chuck, you referenced the Clinton board, but the Bush administration board did its fair share of overruling precedent and establishing new rules, diminishing worker rights, withdrawing coverage from whole groups of workers, shrinking remedies that are already widely criticized as pitiful. And in fact, in late 2007, Congress conducted a joint House-Senate subcommittee hearing on the NLRB and its recent decisions and their impact on workers' rights. So this clearly got this Bush board's withdrawing of board protections and coverage for workers clearly got a lot of attention when the board, sort of the end of the Bush board in 07 as it drew to a close. And it seemed to be a board that was really taking itself into diminished relevance and even into obsolescence, the word, Chuck, that you've used before, in connection with the workplace and making itself less adaptable and less effective to really transformational changes in the American workplace and workforce.
So, what is at stake now? We have a Democratic majority on the board. We have the one Republican on the board facing a term expiration in a few months. Really, there's another Republican nominee out there awaiting Senate action, and there's a backlog of, I understand, some 200 or more cases. Are there major issues right now that are pending before the board that could really shape labor policy?
Let me first start with a little context there. During this period of time when the two-person board has been functioning, I think both Chairman Liebman and Member Schomburg to be applauded for their attempt at getting out whatever cases that they could unanimously agree on would get issued. And of course, that issue has been crisped, and the Supreme Court has heard oral argument in the case, and all of their getting out of approximately 600 cases might have been for naught, but we don't have that decision yet. The backlog of 200 cases by historical standards is rather modest. To be sure, embedded in those 200 are quite a number that could be controversial matters, but it is not as if the ship hasn't been operating during the last 26 months. It has been, and it's not an enormous backlog for the new board to tackle.
I agree. Although case filings are down, in prior years, the backlog has been as high as 500 or 600 cases. And Chairman Lieben and Member Schomburg issued almost 600 cases during this period of time, and we're really quite diligent in trying to push out decisions in cases where they could reach consensus.
Okay, we're going to take a short break right now. We'll be back in a few moments to talk more about the National Labor Relations Board.
Has the recent economic climate affected the financial goals of your firm? Get back on track with help from SunTrust. Our private wealth management legal specialty group works solely with lawyers and their firms to deliver unique solutions designed for the legal community. SunTrust advisors give you sound guidance on everything from maximizing cash flow and wading through benefits planning to understanding how to retain attorneys and staff. Learn more at www.suntrust.com/legal. SunTrust. Live solid. Bank solid. SunTrust Bank. Member FDIC.
Imagine how much easier managing your practice would be if your practice management software was web-based. Your practice would be available anywhere you have an internet connection, completely secure, backed up continuously, and most importantly, easy to use, allowing you to spend your valuable time building your practice instead of managing technology. Start simplifying your practice today with Clio. Sign up for a free, fully functional 30-day trial at www.goclio.com. Use promotional code L2L for a 25% discount.
Someone's at the door.
Don't answer it.
Why not?
I'm listening to Legal Talk Network podcasts to get my CLE credit in West Legal Ed Center.
Oh, I need to do that too. Where do I find them?
It's easy. Just go to LegalTalkNetwork.com and pick a program for CLE, click on it, and start listening. Or go to WestLegalEdCenter.com and choose from any of the Legal Talk Network programs available for CLE.
Perfect. I'll do that right now.
Welcome back to Lawyer on the Legal Talk Network. This is Bob Ambrogi. We're joined by Nancy Schiffer, Associate General Counsel with the AFL-CIO in Washington, D.C., and Chuck Cohen, Senior Counsel at Morgan, Lewis & Bockius in its Labor and Employment Practice Group, also in Washington, D.C. Chuck, you were a member of the NLRB. Tell our listeners a little bit about how it works. I mean, the NLRB is a unique creature to some extent in that it's both a quasi-adjudicative agency, but also a prosecutorial agency under the general counsel. So what is the role of an NLRB member for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with it?
Sure. The functions of the NLRB board members, as opposed to the rest of the agency, is performing the function of an appellate body. They handle appeals of representation cases from regional directors, and they handle, on exceptions, appeals of administrative law judge decisions in representation cases. Unlike most general counsels of government agencies, at the NLRB, it is the general counsel who is the sole prosecutor of cases, and the general counsel decides in his or her discretion which matters to issue complaint on, and only upon the issuance of the complaint does the matter reach the board. The board doesn't always have five members, as we talked about. We did have the luxury at the time that I was appointed in 1994 of a bipartisan package of appointees getting confirmed by the Senate simultaneously. That permits the board, which typically decides cases in panels of three, to go forward and decide those cases. Of course, precedent can be overruled, but it is also a destabilizing event to business, labor, employee community to have rules go back and forth. But unfortunately, that does happen. It has happened more in recent times than it used to, and that has its own added destabilizing effect, of course. As I said before, people tend to overlook the multitude of cases which issue unanimously, regardless of who the board members are at any particular point in time. And I should say also that the dedicated staff of the NLRB that works in the field offices under the direction of the general counsel, day in and day out, handle elections, they handle hearings, they investigate cases, they try cases before administrative law judges, and the functioning of those matters tends to be a lot less politicized than do the cases at the top of the pyramid, which the board itself decides.
Now, the general counsel, Ronald Meisberg, I think originally took that post under a recess appointment. His term also expires in August of this year. Does that mean that we will be having President Obama will be appointing a general counsel or have the opportunity to appoint a general counsel? And what might that mean in terms of NLRB policy? Nancy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, typically, if there's not a confirmed candidate at that time, there could be an acting general counsel so that there's not a vacancy in that position. It's also possible that there could be a recess appointment, as has gotten a lot of attention in other areas. The Obama administration has a lot of nominees that have been held up in the Senate.
A lot of the I think there was an allusion to this earlier, the discussion about the Employee Free Choice Act and concern about what these appointments might mean. That act has been stalled legislatively. Is there an opportunity for the NLRB to do through policy what has not been able to be done through Congress?
Go ahead, Nancy.
In order to really make a difference and really reform labor law, there really needs to be legislative change. This statute is 75 years old. It hasn't kept pace with other employment discrimination statutes. There are a lot of changes that need to be made to bring it up to date. And it really, that is going to require legislative reform.
And what kind of legislative reforms would you want to see? How should the National Labor Relations Act be brought up to date?
We should make sure that workers who want to have a union have a path to forming a union that doesn't involve extended delays, that doesn't involve them having to put their jobs and their families' welfare on the line. For a lot of workers, they face losing their job if they want to have a union and become involved in union activities. We need a way for workers to actually be able to bargain a contract if they decide that they want to have a union. Right now, 44% of first contract bargaining fails, and so we need a way to reverse that trend. The NLRB remedies have been universally criticized as pitiful. They do not affect employer behavior. The Human Rights Watch says they become just a cost of doing business for employers. And so we need to make changes there, and we need to really streamline the process and eliminate so much delay that is now built into the NLRA process.
Chuck, do you agree with any of that?
Not much. It's beyond the parameters, I think, of this show to have the wholesale debate about whether the NLRA really needs to be amended or not. It would take a long time and a lot to go into. And of course, driving a lot of this is the low density number that organized labor has these days. It is down to approximately 7.2% of the private sector workforce, with there actually being more public sector employees represented than private sector employees these days. And whether that's good for the country or not good for the country is, again, I think, beyond this, not just beyond the scope of the program, but basically beyond the purview of the National Labor Relations Board. The board's job is to handle the cases that are brought to it and to decide those cases, to make sure employees do have an opportunity to express their views in a secret ballot NLRB election, unless the law is changed to take away NLRB secret ballot elections. So there's a lot that goes into this. There are horror stories that get trotted out. But in my experience, which is unfortunately at this point just about four decades worth, the so-called good old days before employers were actively trying to impose their will on employees in terms of union representation were not such good old days at all. And I think, in my judgment, there are many world forces, not the least of which is globalization of the economy, that has to do with the union density issue much more than any other issue out there. But that's just a thumbnail of it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Chuck, bringing us back to what actually can be accomplished under the Act, because there, as I said, have really been transformational changes in the organization and character and structure and environment of the workplace. And we need a board that can address those, that can adapt the board, the NLRA, make it relevant and have it meet those changes and those challenges and not shrink away from that and become irrelevant to the workplace.
Well, and there are a number of areas in which the board can make a judgment call one way or the other and come down on an issue in a way that's perceived as pro-management or that's perceived as pro-labor. And it's not legislating per se, but it certainly has a major influence on policy in that regard. We are unfortunately just about getting to the end of our program, and before we do that, I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to close with your final thoughts on this issue, and also if you would like to let our listeners know how they can follow up with you in some way, you're invited to do that as well. Nancy Schiffer of the AFL-CIO, let's start with you.
Okay, thank you, and thanks for inviting me to be on the Lawyer to Lawyer. I appreciate it. We are hoping that with the additional members on the board, so we now have the board at a quorum, that we will see fair and well-reasoned decisions that recognize the basic purpose of the Act to protect workers' rights, to organize, and to bargain collectively, and that we will see a board that steps up to the challenge of the modern workplace and is able to apply the Act in those circumstances. For more information, our website is aflcio.org.
Thank you very much, Nancy. And Chuck Cohen, your final thoughts?
Sure. My final thoughts are we have a board now composed of four individuals, two of whom are recess appointees. I would hope we would be in a position to have five confirmed appointees. The board functions best when that is the landscape there. I am certainly hopeful that Mr. Becker and Mr. Pierce will faithfully administer the NLRA, will do their jobs out there, and will apply the precedent that is outstanding and do their jobs in the way that I'm sure they would intend to have their jobs done. Hopefully, we'll get on with the rest of the appointment process. We'll restore it to the kind of political balance that is envisioned in the statute, and that the Act will be administered and the NLRB will go forward in what it's called upon to do. Oh, and I can be reached if anybody cares at ccohen@morganlewis.com.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again to Nancy Schiffer and Chuck Cohen for taking the time to be with us on today's program. Reminder to our listeners that they can check out all of our Lawyer to Lawyer shows at thelegaltalknetwork.com. And also that they can now earn CLE credit through the West Legal Ed Center for listening to select Legal Talk Network podcasts. To do that, go to thelegaltalknetwork.com and click on West Legal Ed Center. Thanks again to both of you for your time today and your thoughts on this topic. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Lawyer with Robert Ambrogi and J. Craig Williams. Every week, a new legal topic that you won't want to miss. We hope you'll listen again and check out our other shows on the Legal Talk Network.